You're listening to a podcast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9.
Here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9 with Luke, Elliot, Cam, and Charlie.
Speaking of Spotify, let's do a shout out.
We're on Spotify.
We're finally on Spotify. We've done it.
Yes! We made it.
So exciting.
It's been months of back and forth, but you can now listen to us.
Yeah, search Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. We'll pop up our little colourful logo. And you can actually, follow and listen to all of our podcasts.
I'm such a Spotify convert in the last year.
Yeah, I love Spotify. And I almost don't listen to any other platform of anything.
Sorry, is Spotify sponsoring this section of the show?
Don't say that.
Sponsored by Spotify.
I actually can now get rid of all the other apps that I have for downloading Checkpoint so we get the figures and just get it on.
Are you saying all you need as an app is Spotify?
And that was the last episode of Checkpoint.
On Spotify. So we're here to talk about PAX because it is PAX right now. We have stepped away from the conference to bring you this hot, hot episode full of our fresh takes on the games that we've played at PAX.
And if you're listening to this live and you can see one of us, that's a lie.
Yeah, it's an illusion. That's actually our familiar. It's just there.
Yeah. It's my tethered.
Yeah. It's my astral chain link. But we want to talk about PAX because it was a really fun first day. We were lucky enough to get a few of us accessed in the media hour. So we got to go in early and beat some of the queues, which I'm so grateful for. Because
I hate queuing.
Well, that too. But there was a couple of games that I knew. And Charlie, we had the same tactic.
Yeah.
A couple of games that we knew that we had to get to quickly to make sure we beat those queues and get access to them.
Well, I said to you, when I gave you the media badge and you're like, okay, you're going to enter the media thing, I'm like, hit triple A's. Like,
yes.
You're in there as media, you got to hit those big ones and get in and get out.
Because, I mean, let's face it, the indies are fantastic, but there's less people around them queuing up to play them. They're all queuing up for your big games.
Yes.
So that's where you got to go to first. So we went straight away to Final Fantasy VII Remake. Because that, you know, for me, I thought, you know what, the amount of Final Fantasy fans that are out there, this is one that's going to be busy and popular all day. Let's get that out of the way first, right?
Can confirm. Spotted Kieran in the queue later in the day. Possibly twice.
The queue is there all day. And it was a 20-minute demo as well. So, I mean, that means that you are going to be waiting a while to get in there, right? And it was really cool. Did you guys get a chance to play that yesterday or not so much?
Not myself, no.
Cam, did you play it?
No, you know I wouldn't have played
it. But you love Final Fantasy and anime.
It's weird because I do kind of love Final Fantasy, just not that one.
Charlie, what did you think?
I haven't even played the original Final Fantasy VII.
Coming in as a newbie then.
Yeah.
I love you, Charlie.
Oh, don't get too overhead of yourself. I'm probably going to catch up on it before the new one. Yeah, really good, really approachable. The only one I've played is 15, which is, I know, one of the ones a lot of people hate. Yeah. And a tiny bit of 14, another one that is a bit divisive.
I didn't hate 15. 14's
great.
Yes, well, better now than, but no, yeah, it was really approachable. I didn't know what I was doing, but when I got into it, it was just really satisfying. At first, it felt a bit like I was just kind of going through the motions of, like, hacking, and I didn't feel like I was doing much damage when I was fighting that scorpion. But then as soon as you turn... Then, like, when you look at it more, Edie, one of the other writers, kind of gave me a good view on it, that you're kind of really building up the stack to do, like, you pull off your abilities and everything.
Yeah.
And that really helped.
You know, Final Fantasy VII, of course, traditionally is this turn-based title.
Yeah.
And then this one is this real-time sort of combat, which, you know, is very, very different for that particular game. I think people were quite skeptical of that when it was revealed to be that.
It's stuff that they've really played with in a lot of their spin-offs. So, like, especially Final Fantasy VII has had so many spin-offs come off of it where they play with more of an action focus.
Yeah, and I think it balances the sort of combination of the two. So you have that sort of fast-paced hack and slash, but then you can basically pause it at any time to look at your abilities and your items. Oh, and it all kind of goes, like, slow-mo while you do that.
Yeah.
So you are slightly vulnerable when that happens, but, like, not very.
So you played the original Luke as well?
Yes, I did. The original was one of my favorite games back in 1997 when I first played it.
Can I ask a potentially antagonizing question?
Yeah.
Because for me, I look at it, and obviously it's a totally different type of gameplay.
Sure.
What is the remake? Like, what is the same? Why isn't this a brand new game? Like, visually, it's impeccable. It's stunning, right?
Yep.
And you're comparing that to a super old game. Why is this a remake? What is this?
Branding.
I mean, branding is a big part of it. I mean, these are characters that are iconic and people love them. And I mean, even though it's a remake, they are going to be in the same, you know, environments as the original and stuff like that. So it is a remake in every sense of the word.
But the environments will look totally different.
They'll look different, but they'll be familiar to those who played the original in terms of like, oh, now you're in this location, now you're moving to this next location.
Is it the narrative that is consistent?
Yes.
The script writing?
I don't know if the script writing is the same.
It would be different because of, like, the length, right?
I think it would be different. Also, you have to remember as well, the original didn't have, like, voice acting either. You know, so right. This one has full voice acting.
I hope they
full...
keep the script exactly as it is, and we have to hear some of those lines delivered.
And this one has full cutscenes as well, which the original didn't really have.
Because what I'm wondering, I guess, is that, and maybe this is me being entirely presumptuous as somebody who hasn't played didn't play much Final Fantasy VII, but I'm going to assume the characters and that game is iconic. Not because the characters are particularly good characters, but just because for the time it released, that was a very good game and people liked Final Fantasy and Final Fantasy VII. Not necessarily because, you know, Cloud is some amazing
Elliot, now I love you.
Character.
I could make the same argument from other people for Resident Evil 2.
Yeah, I totally would agree.
And
too,
that was remade.
Yeah, they were terrible characters. Yeah,
but that was remade in a fantastic way earlier this year, in a way that I didn't expect to be as good as it was. And I love Resident Evil, but I can see its flaws at the time.
Sure.
Back when I played it on PlayStation 1 back in 98 or whatever it was. I think that Final Fantasy VII, you need to look at it the same sort of way. This is a modern interpretation of a classic game.
You know
there are going to be similarities, but it's going to look different and look nicer. It's going to be upgraded in many ways, and the combat's going to be modernized to what today's standard is.
That Resident Evil comparison actually helps quite a lot, to be honest. Yeah.
Imagine if they fully flip the script and Aerith lives.
Spoiler, jeez. Bruce Willis is dead, like, the whole time.
20 years ago, everyone can just get over it.
It was Earth all along, Cam. Like, what are you doing? I mean...
Oh, Planet of the Apes. I was like, what the hell?
Look at it that way. Look at it as a modern interpretation of a classic game. Some people will love it. Some people will hate it. And then some people are going to be jumping in for the first time, like Charlie, who are going to get a whole new experience they've never seen before and get to try and understand a bit about what we were hyped about 20 years ago. And that's a cool thing as well. Whether it's going to pay off fully in the final release, we don't know. We've only played this
snippet. Okay, like story-wise and... Is there any, like, questionable things considering it's from the 90s?
Yeah. I hope there's that gay sauna scene still.
I'm worried. Are we going to deal with another wave of Sephiroth fanboys?
Yes.
God, no. I quit games.
Okay.
I'm gone. Bye, guys.
Bye, Cam.
Well, Cam's gone. He won't be at PAX either. The panel's cancelled. No, I'm kidding. The panel's still happening. It's going to be amazing tomorrow. Final Fantasy VII. I enjoyed it. I'm keen to play more. It's a 20-minute demo. It's definitely worth checking out if you get the chance at PAX today or tomorrow. It's got several months before it comes out still, and we haven't played anything else of it apart from that main demo that everyone's seen. So, yeah, fingers crossed for a win for them as well. I want it to be good. I don't want it to be a failure, you know? I think...
Oh, it won't be a failure.
Well, but I don't want to be a critical failure
Sure.
Commercially, I don't care.
Yeah, commercially, it's going to go gangbusters.
Exactly.
But you want to be received well.
I want to be genuinely
well.
Good. I want to enjoy it as well.
I still have my... about how they're breaking it up and the episodic
about
nature.
That too. It's going to definitely be a cross-generation thing, which is just... I feel like they haven't planned it the best.
Yeah, because the way it's releasing.
But if PS5 is, you know, backwards compatible, which it is, it's not too bad, right? But let's talk about another big AAA that was at PAX. Once again, Charlie, we hit this really quickly after Final Fantasy because it was right next door, which was handy. Marvel's Avengers.
Oh, here we go.
Now, this is a game that has really copped it since E3 because it was announced earlier in the year, or last year even, or year before. And we thought, this sounds cool. You've got this great big IP, Marvel Avengers. Everyone loves them. You've got Crystal Dynamics, very loved publisher, made the recent Tomb Raider games that I personally loved.
I would say the love for them is a bit diminished after the last Tomb Raider. There's concerns.
Yeah. I think that's a fair perception. I disagree. I enjoyed Shadow of the Tomb Raider quite a lot.
Oh, I just mean general public.
Yeah, that's fair. But look, Marvel Avengers, it was at E3, and they showed this sort of 5-ish kind of minute demo at E3, which kind of showed a few of the characters doing their thing and jumping between them, and people left E3 a bit puzzled, I guess. It wasn't what people expected and wanted. They were like, hang on a second, you know, where's Chris Hemsworth? Where's Robert Downey Jr.? Like, the characters in the game Avengers didn't look like the movie counterparts. I think that was a big thing that threw people, because they went, whoa, this isn't the Avengers that I know and love over the last, you know, 10 years.
I know I am a huge comic book fan, and a lot of my friends who are comic book fans were contacting me straight after it. And I don't think any of them were expecting it to be the cinematic representations of it, because we're used to the fact that there's all these different versions of it.
Yeah.
But something about the art style felt so stock standard, generic and wooden, but like it felt like heavily detailed and like they paid a lot of attention. It was very beautiful, but something just seemed off about it all. And the characters felt stuck in this weird limbo where they want the iconography of the film so people recognize them, but don't want to match the characters exactly. So it's this weird midpoint. And I do know that a lot of fans of comic books were like, what is this?
And that's the thing. I think the trailers and the footage they showed kind of alienated both, right? It was like comic book fans weren't happy, film fans weren't happy. Who is this game for? You know, at that point.
Yeah.
And I will say, you know, we played it. It was about a half an hour demo. So it is worth lining up for because you get a big chunk with the game.
Be prepared with that. It's a long demo and you're staring directly at this. Like, sorry, a long queue.
Yes.
And you're staring directly at the screens while you're waiting, which was not great.
So don't do that.
No. They really needed to put walls up between the crew and
you see everything before you even get there.
Exactly.
But so you got to play as all five characters in the game, the main ones.
It's essentially, it's your top five from the movies. It's Hulk, the original
Thor,
five.
Iron Man, Captain America, Black Widow.
And it's that, basically it's the preview that we saw.
Yeah.
That opening mission they go on, you play through that.
But longer.
Yeah, yeah, you get it's more fleshed out because they did a trimmed down version for E3.
And I'm going to put a controversial statement on the table. I liked it.
Yeah, I thought it was okay. I didn't love it. I think they're still not marketing it the best. I feel like obviously that's like probably the best mission for them to show. But at the same time, I guess I kind of want to see more of what the like bigger missions will look like, the more like individual stories. Because I'm just still not sure what this game wants to be.
I'm with Charlie here. I'm in a middling area. I see potential here. I know, you and I discussed this yesterday. I said I wasn't a fan. I see potential for the game. I think that was a bad demo. I think it was the wrong thing to put forward.
What is it trying to be? Is it trying to be, an action-heavy, kind of bombastic, thrilling?
Almost, isn't it?
Here's what this is to me, I think. This is literally feels like what Marvel movies are doing to cinema. This feels to games. It's a very safe appease a lot of people. The plan is for it to be like you travel around the world to different areas and there's missions, and those areas I think are supposed to be a lot more open than what we experienced. And they keep talking about all this other stuff, like there'll be some levels will be a co-op and you can play with other heroes, and I'm hearing all this and you show a little clip, but I don't know, the demo that they had us play just felt very stilted, on rails. And I get that it's because people are being introduced to it. They need to go through it. I don't know if showing all five of the heroes was the best idea, because you never really got enough time with any hero.
But that could genuinely be the first mission in the game with the tutorial built in, which it was.
Yes, that's what I'm saying. I don't think they should have used that for the demo.
But then you can't just have a demo where you chuck people in the deep end, much like your Days Gone demo last year. Where you
I think there needs to be a middle ground for this kind of thing.
But then do they craft that completely? We don't want them to waste time on a demo and making that when they could be working on the game as well. And I know developers have said it's a real pain sometimes to go and make a demo version of a game like that separately.
I just feel
it's
what
a different team.
What I felt like I was waiting. No, I understand what they did. I understand why they made the choice they did. I just don't think it did what, for me, what and for some others. And this is the whole group that I went in with came out feeling like, yeah, it's good. There's potential, but
yeah.
I think here's my problem. The mechanics that I saw in there, and I was trying to pay attention to the actual quality of the game outside of the flashiness that Marvel does, which is like, Marvel, all the characters, everything's happening, everything's exciting. You're distracted by the fact that, because sometimes you go out of a Marvel movie and you're like, I had such a great time, what a thing. And then a week later, you're like, actually, that movie was just all right. And I felt that, I was trying to see past that, and I felt that coming out of this game. I looked at it and I was like, the combat was all right, but it felt like a bit sticky, It felt like a discount version of Arkham's combat in terms of I didn't feel like there was a good flow to hitting characters. And so for a lot of time, you end up hitting midair. The flying as Tony Stark felt terrible.
It was fine at the start, but when you're doing the hovering fighting, that was...
Yeah, the flying and hovering in combat was
when
really
you're,
weird.
After them and you're trying to shoot, and I'm like, this is so rigid and I can't move properly, and I feel like I'm on a rails shooter right now. I need to see what the game's saying it's going to be, because what it's telling me it is from this demo wasn't something that I want to play.
Weirdly enough, Anthem probably went a flying, shooting, hovering quite well. That's one thing, even if it the didn't one do thing many did other right. things. Well, yeah. Yeah.
I think for me, I still, you know what, I'm coming out of it a bit more positive than you. I think for me, I mean, I've seen all the Avengers movies and the Marvel Universe. I haven't been a fan of the comics. I'm not a comic guy. So all I have to base it off is the movies. I think it did capture the feeling of this epic kind of moment.
Oh,
you
definitely.
Know, I think it had, you know, I enjoyed playing as Thor, throwing the hammer back and forth and then bringing it back to yourself like in God of War with the other thing. I like that.
That mechanic they've done right.
That was good. It felt good.
There's good moments in there.
I even liked playing as Hulk and like jumping between all the walls and stuff as everything was falling apart around you. I liked that too.
Okay, but I think it's just... You can't really do much with Hulk, though, at the same time. Like, it's very one note.
There was also just a lot of, like, there was a lot of, like, with Hulk, like, floatiness in the air, and I just felt like I kept, like, hitting the thing, and then you just fall off.
Oh, yeah, I did that a couple times. I kept falling.
What am I doing?
I made it all the way through without falling. And I don't know if that's, I'm not trying to be, oh, I'm so good at crazy. But no, I'm just saying,
but you're still powered through.
Yeah. I'm just saying, like, it worked enough for me that I didn't have that moment.
Yeah.
And I don't know, maybe I just, but Iron Man I sucked with. Like, I was, like, hovering and falling and, like, punching and, like, I'm terrible.
It's such a small thing, but the thing that drove me insane with Iron Man is there was no, like, smash down into the ground button, so I kept being like, "I'll push triangle and I'll go down."
Just
like,
awkwardly,
I'll just awkwardly drop slowly.
So look, that's Marvel's Avengers. Check it out if you're on the show floor, but we'll have to wait and see. Again, we've got several months before that comes out to see how it's really going to look at the end of the day.
And that's the thing, I need to see what else is coming, because there's a lot of stuff in that preview at the end. Also, don't put like a 5-minute trailer at the end of your thing. You just had people randomly standing around being like, do I walk away now? Like, it was badly done.
So that's where me and Charlie went first. Elliot, where did you go to first with your time at PAX?
The very first game I went to was Doom Eternal. I broke up from the pack and decided to hit that because I knew that would get massive lines throughout the weekend.
What a lone wolf you are.
Well, and especially because of this... this delay that we talked about in the first hour of the show, meaning the game is actually releasing in, what, like 4 or 5 months now.
Yeah.
It is good to get in there early because I'm sure I'm not going to get another opportunity before it launches. And Doom Eternal felt really good. It's introducing a lot of new stuff as well, and that scares me a bit. So the demo I was playing, Doom 2016 felt like such a classic shooter to me. Right, like there's no iron sights. You're just running around. You're sprinting. You're jumping. You're killing things.
It was
quite stripped back, but because of that, it was very powerful. Right, Doom 2016 was so good because you had to be constantly moving. It felt like an arena shooter where if you stood still for even half a second, that's the opportunity for the enemies to take you out. So you were constantly moving, swapping between your weapons, and just blasting things to pieces. But in this new Doom that's coming out, they had to tutorialize it because they introduced so many new things, including like climbing walls. There was a grapple hook. There were alternative fire modes for your weapons. There's a hotkey just for a flamethrower that kind of launches out of your back. There is a hotkey for a chainsaw that you can equip to use as a finisher. There was a hotkey for like a final blow kind of thing.
It's a lot of hotkeys.
It was, honestly. And you had to memorize them all because in Doom Eternal, what happens is if you're running low on health, you need to do a final blow finisher to get health from the enemy. Yeah. If you're running low on ammo, you need to use your chainsaw because that's how you get... ammo from your enemy.
I love that about the original too, or 2016 version, where you have to keep being aggressive with your fighting style to ensure that you stay alive and keep moving. So it's so fast paced because of that, and you have to keep that pace.
However, in Doom Eternal, some of that pace slows down a bit because rather than a sprint button, you've got a dash. But it's on a cooldown, right? So you'll be kind of meandering a little bit in comparative to how Doom 2016 felt, just as your basic walk speed, but then you'll be trying to dash to get out of things. And I get why they did it, because it helps for that kind of that intense moment of like burst energy, speed, get away from that projectile kind of thing. But for me, as one of those old school gamers, I like games that allow me to sprint, bunny hop, and just leap around the arena I'm in as fast as I can at all times and not have any slow moments.
It's such a pity that no game has ever had both sprinting and dashing. Like,
I'm sure they have, surely.
I'm being facetious, you idiot. I'm talking about the fact that you could easily have sprinting and dashing and they've chosen just to go with dash.
I mean, unless I just couldn't find the button that sprinted, but...
Which does happen.
Yeah, well,
in these demos, when you don't have someone to be like, this exactly. does this, and we'll talk about one we had a problem with later.
Absolutely. Yeah.
But
so
other than that, it's felt really good to play. The meat hook was fantastic.
Ooh.
You just like kind of hook to an enemy and bring yourself to them and shock them in the face and just keep going. And yeah, it was really cool.
Absolutely. Now, Cam, where did you go first on your PAX journey? You did line up with everybody else.
I did.
Who I call the common folk.
Yes. I actually, because I yesterday didn't have a checkpoint day. I took a day for myself to spend the day with my husband.
Treat yourself.
Treat myself. So I was in amongst the general pub.
Ah, yep.
Yeah, the riffraff.
What did you play first?
Well, Marvel Avengers was one of the first ones I kind of lined up for. The other ones that I checked out was Luigi's Mansion 3.
Ah. Yes.
Which was a lot of fun. Again, if someone at PAX is listening, like, figure out who's running your booth, because they're all a little disorganized this year. Like, they randomly put three of us to stand in front of one TV, and we're like, you guys can just take turns. And we're like, what? And then I noticed they were doing it with anyone that was like a couple or like three.
They wanted to move people through quicker, yeah, probably.
They walked them in and like, you just go one after the other. So when one finishes, you hand it to the other person. So then you've got people being like, okay, well, I'm just standing here watching my friend play, and then I'll play the same thing that I've already watched. It wasn't great. Luigi's Mansion itself, charming. It always was going to be. It has a really cool look to it. I will say, I'm worried that Nintendo doesn't seem to have figured out how to do good twin stick. I don't know how important it is to have, once you start sucking with the vacuum cleaner, you can go up and down, and then left and right, rather than being a directional for where Luigi's pointing,
yeah,
it's you push left and he'll turn left, and he'll just keep turning left no matter where you're pointing. So right. If you're trying to go to the left, but you want to be looking right, on a normal twin stick shooter, you just do the left stick to the left and the right stick to the right. But if you're doing this, he just spirals right. So you need to like eventually let it go. If you stop vacuuming, he turns and faces the way that he's walking. So you can't have him just constantly pointing at the enemy.
I had the exact same problem. I found it really... and I think it's just the perspective they choose, the kind of plane that the camera is on in comparison to Luigi. And then you trying to figure out how you direct Luigi to face the right position, because that's super important in this game. Your flashlight has to kind of engage and spook the ghosts so that you can start capturing them, and your vacuum cleaner has to literally be facing the direction, and pretty tightly facing the direction of what you want to suck up. And if you're incapable of doing that, you just flounder around. And it felt like, yeah, when you introduce like video games to your grandma and she looks up immediately and can't figure out how to look down. That's how I felt playing Luigi's Mansion.
It was the only game this whole weekend where I felt like I didn't have a handle of the controls.
And I don't know if that was a problem with the first game or not. I honestly don't remember.
I
reckon it's just one of those things you get used to after enough playtime.
To be fair, the first games were also on a handheld as well. So I don't know if that impacts the way
GameCube
it was.
I played Luigi's Mansion.
Oh, that's true, actually. Yeah. Yeah. But that was a weird different controller too, though. Like the way it was set up.
GameCube. Yeah, it was different.
The control scheme has a feeling like it should be over his shoulder and not from above him.
That'd be an interesting take on that game, wouldn't it? It was over the shoulder.
Everything else, though, honestly, everything else, so fantastic. Charming.
Beautiful.
Yeah. So great. Stylistic, so cool. It seems like so much expanded like from the first game in a really cool direction.
Yeah.
I want to shout out to a couple more AAAs before we move on to the indies, because I want to talk about the indies as well. Mm. So Biomutant is there as well.
Yes.
Got a chance to play that. It's fun. It's fun. It's from the guys who made Just Cause. You play as this little cat raccoon type thing. I don't know.
It's a furry.
I think it's... Yeah, it's definitely... It's
it's fun, though.
It was fun, but my problem with the demo is I think it was, like, too much information at once with no actual explanation at all. And they did this weird thing to the three of us and to Rowan and Sarah, who I was spending yesterday with. They gave us third-party controllers that didn't match any of the prompts, but then also didn't match any of the instructions in front of us.
Yeah, that was dumb.
And so it's like, press Y, and I'm like... Wait, which one's why?
I was actually playing the game at the Alienware area with a mouse and keyboard still giving me Xbox prompts, and I had to guess what I was doing.
That's a really bad oversight.
Have they learned from that for day two?
Look, it's one of those things that, maybe it was, we were there quite early, and maybe 2 hours into the expo, they figured it out and they fixed a lot of those problems.
I was there at the end of the day.
Okay.
Any other AAAs you want to shout out to before we head to IndyLand?
To be honest, there's not really that many others showing there.
And Pokemon Sword and Shield's there. I didn't get a chance to play it because the queues were massive.
And I'm like, that's in a month's time.
Call of Duty's there. Meh. Darksiders Genesis is playable there.
That one I do want to check
out. More of a double A, but yeah, I noticed it's like Diablo Darksiders.
It really doesn't have a lot of cues at
all. No, it doesn't. You can just kind of walk up.
Yeah.
Bit of fun, simple. It's also co-op, split screen if you want to play it with a friend there too.
The new Destroy All Humans is there.
Yeah, there's a few cool things to check out.
I played Ninja Theory's Bleeding Edge.
Yeah.
That
What'd
was there.
What did you think of that?
Oh, I'm the wrong person to ask. I had no idea what I was doing the whole thing.
So it's. I mean, it is kind of like an Overwatch, but a melee kind of game.
Yeah.
Where it's those classes, and you spawn into two different teams, and you're basically just attacking each other, and whatever neutral objective might be on that map as well. It reminds me of stuff like Battleborn. I just don't know that it's going to take off.
Nah.
It might not even be the game's fault. It might just be that there's not an audience.
It's such a crowded market, though, isn't
it? You said the name, and it took me so long to figure out what you were talking about. Mm. Like, this is the thing. It's all branding in that area. You need something that's going to push you above Overwatch.
There's nothing. There's absolutely nothing wrong with what I played. I feel like that kind of melee gameplay, there's less people going, oh, I want that. It feels slightly less tight. It doesn't feel quite as competitive a bit, like, I don't know.
Also, the hero shooter genre, there's a, like, people keep trying to jump in and then it just sizzles and
on a similar note, I played Roller Champions, which is an Ubisoft game that's coming out eventually next year, I think. This is the one, the Roller Derby meets Rocket League, people are calling it. And once again, it felt like I can't criticize the game because there's really nothing glaringly wrong, but I just don't see it taking off in the way Rocket League did, because Rocket League still exists and Roller Derby as it just wasn't quite as captivating.
My feeling on Roller Derby, do you feel it's overproduced?
What, Roller Champions or Roller Derby?
Sorry, Roller Champ. Yeah, just Roller Derby as a genre.
As an entire sport.
Roller Champions feels overproduced, and I think that's why something like Rocket League felt a little under... It felt like it was just like it hit the right level to really blow up, whereas, I don't know, it didn't
work. I'll try to explain it quickly, because Roller Champions, it's just you're going around a roller rink, there's two teams of three. There's a ball, and you can kind of tackle the person with the ball by just kind of charging at them. And if you do, make contact with them, you grab the ball for your team. And there's a hoop, and you got to do a full lap to activate the hoop, and then you score. And, yeah, I mean, it might take off. I don't know. I left a little bit underwhelmed.
I mean, for me, it's a free-to-play game. It's not going to set the world on fire. It's probably never intended to. Yeah. It's just adding to their large stable of ongoing franchises they can work on. And me and Charlie didn't get a chance to play it, because while we were standing there ready to play, the entire Ubisoft booth had a power surge and every single game shut down and stopped working.
I think it started with Roller Champions. Like,
yeah, we
that
saw
was
it
the
like
first
glitching.
Thing.
It was like they were frame by frame moving across.
It was
really
like a
awkwardly.
Horror film.
Yeah, we were like, this is weird. Everyone's looking around like, what the hell? And next minute,
and then every monitor,
where we're like, oh, and it went black. Everyone's like, what the hell is going on?
But that's hilarious.
I was just saying, I was like, I feel bad, but funny stuff. Like, poor Ubisoft. But look, let's move on to some indies, because we want to make sure we talk about them before we head off today. Let's just go high level and go through what our favorite indie was from the show floor yesterday. Of course, next week on the show, we are going to have more of a PAX recap, so we can talk more about the things we see today and tomorrow and some great interviews. That's next week on the show. But let's just dive in to our favorite indies. Who wants to kick it off? Elliot?
It's such a difficult question.
It's hard, isn't it? Do we have the same one, I think?
We might have the same one. Okay. Let's tag team this one and talk a bit about a game called Heavenly Bodies.
Heavenly Bodies.
Was this the last thing we ended up playing that day?
It was. We literally had to be told to leave the show for while we were playing it, because it was like we were still playing it and enjoying it. This is a great little game where you play as little astronauts.
Yeah, so Heavenly Bodies reminds me of games like Quop, right? Where you're... the fun and enjoyment of the game comes from the ridiculous way you control the characters and trying to get them to do what you want. In Heavenly Bodies, you're controlling an astronaut. Your left thumbstick controls your left arm. The right thumbstick controls the right arm. The triggers control, your grip. And so you're literally, like reaching your arm out, gripping onto something, and trying to propel yourself forward to
move
through.
There's no gravity, because you're in space,
obviously.
Yeah, yeah.
So you're trying to propel yourself to move through the space station, but it's co-op. So your co-op friend is grabbing your ankle while you do so and pulling you backwards. And you're both trying to awkwardly co-op your way through this space station, because there are actual timed missions you have to achieve to kind of get to the end of this. Cameron is pointing at me furiously.
I have done these games with Elliot before, and he is the worst partner.
I will say, I think I carried that team.
Hey, It took me a while.
I would like go out and do objectives, and Luke would be like spinning around in circles, like, Elliot, help me.
No, no, let's rewind. If yours is a matter of learning the things and all that, that's fine. Elliot is deliberately intrusive. He has thrown me to the wolves so many times to the point that a developer would stand behind us one time was like, ooh, that's not very nice.
There was one point where you kind of leave the space station and go out into like into actual space, and I got out there first, so I closed the door, and Luke is just still stuck in the space station being like, how do I get out? How do I get out? He and eventually got point, out, and he just floated away.
I was going to say,
I was going to hold on to something, and then the door opened, everything got sucked out. I got sucked out and thrown into the freaking middle of space.
Into the void of space.
I was going to say, well, I half expected you to say that Elliot grabbed you and just spun you off. Look, you're George Clooney in Gravity.
I tipped him away.
It's a funny one, because I mean, the game, I have to say,
we were giggling the whole time.
I played probably, like, I don't know, 20 games yesterday, and the most fun I had was Heavenly Bodies. The amount of giggles that we had just laughing at me going, Elliot, no, I can't move, and like trying to pull myself and fling myself and float through.
You were like flapping through space at one point. You figured out you could propel yourself by literally flapping your arms.
Yeah, I was like flying. I was like, I can do this. It was so ridiculous. I grabbed there was like a trophy outside the spaceship just on the outside. I grabbed it and like flung it randomly at Elliot. Like, it was just it was stupid, it was fun, and I love those kinds of games, and they work so well as a side-by-side, you know, multiplayer experience. Yep,
where you can heckle.
Yeah, and you can laugh, and yeah, maybe you can be obstructive to each other once you know what you're doing, but for us, it was just the learning was so fun, trying to figure this game out, and I highly recommend checking out Heavenly Bodies on the show floor. It's so far my favorite indie that I saw yesterday.
You're looking at me now?
I am looking at you now.
I didn't get much time for indies because I usually Fridays are the quiet day to hit up those AAAs, and then I just spend the rest of the weekend just being like, I only care about indies. AAAs can rot in hell. which is the way I feel a lot of the time. However, can I just say, on a side note, did everyone feel like Friday was absolutely insane this time?
It was busy.
It was way busier than normal, and I am terrified of the rest of this weekend.
Today sold out. So,
yeah. And tomorrow is more sold out than Friday was, I think.
It's getting there. Yep.
But I didn't get much time for indies, but I did play a cute little one called Brimstone Brawlers, which is a top-down four-player brawler, kind of like take something those things like League and that. And then just remove like all the tower defense and just have like the battles moment to moment.
Right, like Battle Riot.
Yes, like Battle Riot. You've got your four, you got your heroes, you've got the four powers to use. There are some objects appearing around the stage that you can go to pick up. It's got a Victorian, like a Victorian England vibe to it. I played as a plucky young engineer, and she had a giant wrench that I was using to attack people. And then there was a whole bunch. There's a host of really interesting characters. I went to it because the art style feels really polished and finished. And it was fun. It was just stupid. Again, that stupid fun beside people. Like, the timer is clicking down, and the guy I was chasing to kill had like one hit left on him. And like, it literally hit the finish line, and it like everything slows down. The camera zooms in on him, and you just see my character do her dash ability from the side and just smack him across the screen. Because I'm like, I don't care that I've lost. I need this last hit. I need to do this. And it was just fun bedlam, and there was cool characters, and it just worked really well, and it was crisp. And you need games like that to have that kind of crispness.
Absolutely. Charlie, what would you say is your favorite indie so far at PAX?
A game you and I played called Fork Knight. Not Fortnite.
It's a fork knife, I think.
I thought it was Knight, because you're like
that's a true, knight actually. Jousting. It is Fork Knights, you're right.
Yes. So basically it's kind
of... Fork Knife, also a fun name. Somebody should pick that
yeah,
up.
Yeah, someone make Fork Knife.
Knife Fork.
It's an eating simulator.
So basically, it's kind of similar vibe to what you two played. It's a bit ridiculous, but it's a fighter kind of on a platform, so I guess kind of like Smash, but you have like cutesy kind of character design. It looks a bit like Overcooked, but
Yeah, you're literally playing on, like, barbecues and kitchen benches. Yeah. So your characters are based on, like, little food items.
Yeah.
I love this.
And yeah. So, like, you get chucked into rounds and you have to, like, parry with, like, either, like, a spatula or, like, a fork or... And,
poker
like,
or whatever.
And,
yeah. It's like a fencing kind of thing, right? Yeah, basically. Like, sort of jousting with each other.
I'm very here. There's been, there's a lot of, like, games that are trying to not be a smash killer, but a smash alternative. And I like that because they play around with some things like this.
Yeah, and so it's quick rounds too, right?
Yeah, like, it just went through, like, super quick. We wouldn't do, like, what, like, 20 rounds or something.
Or more. I think we played with one of the developers. I think that the end score was, like, we played about 40 rounds of this game within, like, I don't know, 5 to 10 minutes. Because it's just their quick, like, 5-second rounds.
So it's like a one-hit death.
One-hit death. Yeah. So it's like, well, stab, done, winner. And then you move on to the next one. And it changes environment. There's a barbecue there. And there's a kitchen. On.
Charlie.
Like the Nidhogg speed. Yes.
Yeah.
I want to know, did Luke hide at the sidelines and wait for other people to kill each other before he jumped in?
We all did a bit of that, really. So, like,
but
there's
Luke
some
definitely did it.
I ended up winning.
It became
thing.
A good. I mean, it's a good strategy, yeah, because there's like different environment stuff. So, like, there's like a kitchen table where like you can like move plates and then kind of like burrow under them while there's people above you fighting and everything.
Yeah, and there's like a knife that will drop down and chop at times as well. There's like burners to worry about. So, I mean, you got to worry about these things. Yeah. I was a bit tactical. I think that's the joy of these games. Like this, and like how Smash Brothers is designed, where some people go for the aggressive tactic and some people think about their positioning and have a different way of playing.
Cowards.
Well,
cowards.
Winning cowards.
Do you know what?
True. Can't argue with that.
I'm a Zelda main, so I know all about camping on the side.
But it was really fun. I mean, these devs came over from New Zealand to show off their game.
Yeah.
Really fun one. Check it out. It looks really unassuming. It's just there on like one laptop because they brought it on pretty short notice, but it is really fun to play.
Mm.
Oh, I love it. Those like endearing moments where it's like, this is all I got. And it's like, you just play it and it's just a charming game.
Yeah. And that's what it was.
Yeah.
And again, we were giggling the whole time. Pretty
definitely.
Much.
Yeah.
Yeah, exactly. Getting those kill shots. And even the developer was like surprised at some of the kill shots we were both getting. I was like, oh, wow. You know, pretty impressive.
A quick shout out to Lethal Lawns that has had such a level up since last year. This massive arcade booth that they have is insane.
I mean, Lethal Lawns was one of my picks from last year. Just as so silly fun. But yeah, it's back with an arcade booth, which is awesome. Speaking of booths, should we get people to stop by the Checkpoint booth? Because if you are at PAX today or tomorrow, Saturday or Sunday, in the Diversity Lounge upstairs, come find us. There is a Checkpoint booth because we are doing massive giveaways. Like, we want to just say hi to you as well.
Yeah.
And come chat if you want to.
We had some great chats yesterday. I think my favorite part of PAX so far, I'm not even just saying this, but genuinely having conversations with everyone out there and just talking about how, you know, being different in the video game community and in life in general has been such a big, impactful thing. And I think the Diversity Lounge is fantastic. There's some great community groups there. We're there as well. And we also run competition from the booth too.
Yeah.
So you can actually win a really cool prize pack featuring an Alienware headset, a bunch of games, including like Kingdom Hearts,
Borderlands 3,
Monster Hunter Iceborne, just a bunch of really cool stuff.
Yeah.
So head to the Checkpoint booth, say hi, get involved. Our panel is tomorrow.
Yes.
So, Cam, tell us all about
it. I'm ready. So, tomorrow, Luke is hosting the panel for us, but I'll be on there with Jordan Raskopoulos. DC McCormick.
Also amazing.
And Marco Taco Ryan.
Don't know him, but he sounds amazing.
You can also find Marco under Marcomatic in the PAX Rising area with his augmented reality pins that he's giving out. And it is loud and proud. It's queer voices in the impact of queer voices in the gaming space. And it's all about the positivity that comes from when people are unapologetically queer in the world of gaming. So we've got people from all over. You've got myself from from a media standpoint. Jordan, who is both a comedian and actor and just a huge influence right now, has become such a massive voice for our community.
Yeah.
DC is a streamer, and Marco is, as I said, an artist but also a developer.
Yeah, and I'm like a PR media mogul.
Yeah.
So, I mean, it's a good mix of everything kind of all together.
Yeah.
Yes, I just branded myself as that.
You did. You called yourself a mogul.
We were all moving on.
Yeah, it's going to be a really fun panel, so make sure you check it out. Where is it? When is it?
That is at the Fruit Bat Theatre at 11 a.m. Also going to plug, I have a second panel that afternoon at 3 p.m. at the Galar Theatre that's all about romance and gaming, about couples who game and about how gaming has worked into our relationships.
Fantastic. So make sure you come and find Checkpoint at the booth, at the Diversity Lounge, our panels. We're running around in very colourful shirts, so you'll see us.
And there's one more plug that we have to do. You and I, Luke, tonight at 6 p.m. at the Diversity Lounge, come and hear us goof as we take part in a very silly quiz.
That's right. It's going to be the silliest, which is very exciting. That's it from us. We've got to run out. We're going to head back to PAX. We've got stuff to do. We've got to have a big afternoon and a big day tomorrow. So come and check it out, PAX 2019. And yeah, tune in next week for another bit of a recap for some more of the games that we've played. And stay tuned for some great podcasts as well. Elliot interviewed one of the heads of Minecraft Dungeons.
Yep.
Cam with your Destiny 2 interviews. We're going to be talking to one of the lead developers of Cyberpunk 2077. There's head of Devolver, one of the founders.
It just keeps going, doesn't
so
it?
So much good stuff.
Yeah,
so
it's
just keep following our podcast over the next couple of weeks.
Stitcher,
awesome
iTunes,
stuff.
And now Spotify.
That's
Spotify,
right.
Woo woo.
Not sponsored by Spotify. Elliot, thank you.
Thanks, Luke.
Cam, thank you.
Thank you.
Charlie, thank you.
Thank you.
Pleasure to have you on the show for the first time. And we'll catch you next week here on Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. Bye.
Bye.
Make sure you subscribe to our podcast to hear all our past episodes. Checkpoint on Joy 94.9, and we'll catch you at the next checkpoint.
Listening to a Joycast of Checkpoint on Joy 94.9. If you enjoyed this podcast, please subscribe and rate us on iTunes and Stitcher.